From a dot in the middle of the map, this is Midwesternish. I'm Gina Kaufman.
Jeff Houghton here in the Midwest. It has become clear that many in our media centers on the coast do not know the Midwest very well, with very few reporters assigned to the area. So I have taken it upon myself to send reports back from this foreign land.
This little spoof made by a comedian in Missouri made the rounds on the internet. If you're from anywhere in the Midwest, your cousin probably shared it on Facebook.
I'm here in Missouri, or as you may know it, Iowa or Ohio or East Dakota. The people in this region affectionately refer to the Midwest as America's torso when it's laying down.
The internet has revealed something Midwesterners have long known to be true, that people on the coasts will believe anything about what it's like here. But when I think about what makes something Midwestern, even I cannot come up with an easy answer. And I'm from here. Is it the smell of homemade apple pie in a farmhouse kitchen? A certain kind of politics or an attitude? Even the pace of life? Maybe the Midwest is just a collection of states. But if it is, I defy you to name which ones off the top of your head. On this episode, the Midwestern identity crisis and its bizarro cousin. Extreme, over-the-top, Midwestern pride.
Well, Raygun is the greatest store in the universe. We received that award a few years ago from Raygun.
That's Mike Draper. He owns a store called Raygun. If you live in Des Moines, Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, or Kansas City, you may have seen people walking around wearing t-shirts festooned with slogans like Iowa, 75% vowels, 100% awesome, or don't meth with Missouri, America needs lesbian farmers, or landlocked and loaded. Those shirts come from Raygun.
I started selling t-shirts in 2004 in Philly and then moved back to Des Moines in
2005. Wait, in Philly?
Yeah, I went to the University of Pennsylvania and started selling t-shirts on campus. And then I thought of it because as I was out there selling t-shirts, I was thinking of, well, what's a niche market I could sell in? And I was wearing a shirt that said Iowa. That was it. And somebody said, oh, that shirt's hysterical. And I said, oh, really? And they go, where did you get it? I'm like, what? In Iowa. And they go, oh, okay.
Wait,
and
why did they think it was funny?
I think they thought I was wearing it ironically. Like I had bought it at, you know, maybe I was from Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and had bought this Iowa shirt out of Salvation Army just to wear to parties and be funny.
Like with the trucker hat?
Yeah, even without the trucker hat. It was kind of one of those moments where I'm like, you're going to have to explain the joke to me. But it was then that I kind of realized that the Midwest was sitting on this gold mine of inside jokes and marketability and that I should move back and start making content about the Midwest. And since leaving the Midwest, I've been kind of fascinated by the region.
Mike has made a living coming up with snarky Midwestern retorts to coastal stereotypes. But even Mike Draper has a hard time defining just what makes the Midwest Midwestern.
I mean, if Midwest is actually not a direction. So if you tell somebody to drive Midwest, it's like, you mean in a friendly manner with a pitchfork? You know, west, south, northeast, those are all actual directions. It used to be the Northwest, and the term Midwest actually comes from Kentucky and Tennessee were the Midwest, and then the Southwest was Alabama and Mississippi. So when they were developing westward, that's how they broke it up. But then as the Northwest obviously kept moving towards the Pacific Ocean, we kind of became the old Northwest. And then the Midwest was more Kansas and Nebraska. And eventually Midwest was kind of the name that we were stuck with. And it's you do have a tough time if you didn't call it the Midwest. What would you call it? The center? The heartland? Middle America has been co-opted to describe anybody that is backwards and afraid of things almost. Like they say, typical middle American in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And so it is tough. I mean, name-wise, we don't have like the best ground to start from. I think Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana are the only ones that are for sure Midwestern because everyone's always trying to leave the Midwest, it feels like, where Dakota down to Kansas are kind of the plain states. Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota are always like, well, we're kind of the Great Lakes states. Minnesota's the north. So it is more difficult to get a regional identity here, although I feel like we are stitched together through, you know, shared place, history, development, the Midwest was kind of like the first American colony. As, you know, the Indiana author Gene Shepherd said, the Midwesterner is a born audience member. There is this thing that ties us together of you're always in this kind of central, overlooked, flyover country, looking out at the rest of the world. And whether we realize it or not, all of us, no matter where we are in the region, kind of have that in common, where even a big city like Chicago may not feel like it has a lot in common with Lorenz, Iowa, but even Chicago is kind of the second city or the overlooked big city. There's New York, LA. Oh, and then there's also Chicago.
But then with this overlookedness, it seems like maybe there is kind of a growing curiosity, but maybe a slightly, I don't know, exoticizing curiosity about the Midwest right now?
I mean, I really think the overlooked nature is one of the only things we have in common, because in terms of economy, arts, people, it really is, you know, extremely varied. And so it's hard to say, oh, well, these are the cultural touchstones. But when you are overlooked, you do subconsciously kind of develop a way of looking at the world and talking about the world. And so when people talk about, you know, Midwestern modesty, I think that is ingrained across the board from Kansas to Michigan, just in the sense that you will think to yourself, oh, but, you know, there's probably so much more exciting going on elsewhere. I don't want to bore them talking about myself. And then even in
is that why a t-shirt that says Iowa is funny?
Yeah, I guess so. It is just kind of this, you know, a forgotten land. I still don't understand why a shirt that just says Iowa is funny.
But seriously, what defines us and what we are is that you don't know us?
Yeah, a little bit. It's something that stitches everybody together, but that fact that you feel like you're overlooked kind of determines a lot about yourself versus, you know, how you communicate with others, how you observe the world. And if you look at, you know, things like comedy, the Midwest has produced some of the greatest comedians, whether it's Johnny Carson, David Letterman, the Belushis. Saturday Night Live is, you know, connected with New York City, obviously, but the original Saturday Night Live grew out of, you know, Second City Improv in Chicago. And so the original group was mainly the Midwest plus Canada goes to New York to make a comedy show.
Uh-huh.
And I think growing up here gives you a better sense of comedy because you're used to observing everything else from the outside. So, yeah, just being overlooked is a quality that kind of touches on lots of things about the culture.
The idea that Midwestern identity is based on our shared status as, like, outcast states might be true. But can that really be all there is to our entire region? We're just leftovers from all the other regions that were formed first, defined more by what we aren't than what we are?
Well, I think one of the key ingredients to having a strong identity, or at least being aware of your identity, is knowing your history. And I think these Midwestern states got to do a lot better job of promoting the history of the region.
John Locke is the first president of the Midwestern History Association. He's just written a new book that tries to define the Midwest from a historical perspective. It's called The Lost Region.
What I mean by lost is that there used to be a very robust field of Midwestern history. And Midwestern history used to be taught at all the Big Ten universities in the Midwest back when the Big Ten was what it was supposed to be, a Midwestern conference, and they didn't have these weird schools like Rutgers and Maryland in it, which is insane, but that's another topic for another day. But back in the day, there used to be a very robust field of Midwestern history and a lot of historians working in that field, and they had professional journals and they had conferences and they churned out books about the Midwest and very big books of history about the Midwest won Pulitzer Prizes. And that entire field, that entire field of study collapsed in the years after World War II. So it dwindled down to us. Well, a bunch of reasons. I think the Midwestern universities, for one, lost their older generation of leaders who kept this field going, and the newer generation of leaders post-World War II, more internationally oriented, more cosmopolitan universities, they saw these old fields as kind of dull and backward and retrograde and unimportant. You know, here's a good example of this. University of Minnesota, a huge institution, has zero people teaching the history of the Midwest or the history of Minnesota. By contrast, University of Georgia has 10 people teaching the history of the South and Georgia. Other regions in the country just do a better job of studying their history and developing historians who are experts in their history.
You know, how would you define the Midwest?
Mike is right. It's the 12 states that begin in Ohio. It goes out into Kansas, Nebraska, and the Dakotas. It includes Missouri, where you're located, Gina. But one of the problems with the Midwest, unlike the Old South, which has very rigid boundaries because it's very traceable to the old Confederacy, et cetera, and we know exactly where New England is, you know, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, et cetera. One of the problems with the Midwest is its boundaries are fuzzy. I'm in South Dakota, for example. I'm in eastern South Dakota. This is very much the Midwest. But once you cross the Missouri River, it's a different place. It's a lot more ranchy. There's a lot more Indian reservations. There's a lot more topography. It's drier. There's less rain. There's a lot more
wind. What do you mean
wind.
By more topography?
I mean, in my part of the country, it's pretty flat. It's all farmland. It drains slowly. But you get west of the river, you have more mountains, you have more valleys, you have more of a western scene.
So is the Midwest strictly a geography, or is there a culture at the heart of the idea? Is that why maybe we have fuzzy boundaries or such diverse geography that all calls itself one region?
Well, I think that contributes to the fact that there's a weaker identity here or weaker regional unity. But I think, you know, there's a lot of things we have in common. The Northwest Ordinance, for example, that had a great influence on the region and structuring the region in such a way that makes the Midwest what it is today.
What do you mean?
Well, for example, the Midwest, as it developed in the 19th century, ended up being extremely different from the South because the Northwest Ordinance from the very beginning banned slavery. And so in the Midwest, you end up with a whole region of a lot of little farms that were growing corn and staple crops. And so you get
as
a much more decent—
As opposed to large plantations.
Exactly.
So, okay, obviously we have a stake in this. Our podcast is called Midwesternish. And part of what I like about the name is that I feel like there's a question mark in it. That ish is kind of a way of asking, is this Midwestern? How about that? When you call something Midwestern, people are going to automatically make assumptions about what that means. So if we tell stories about people and things that happen to be real and true in this part of the country, are they Midwestern, even if they don't match those assumptions? When we hear something like Midwestern equals rural, do we embrace that idea? Because if we do, that means we just pretend the cities don't exist or somehow don't belong. The other option is we change our definition.
You know, as Mark Twain said, it's not about what you don't know. It's what you know for certain that just isn't quite so. And people have this idea of, even going back to the Northwest Territory, that it was just a group of settlers who came in and there was a totally empty region and they populated it. Well, that's not true at all. And in fact, the people who were here before had slowly moved over and were kind of this, you know, free-spirited outlander types. And in some cities, like near Detroit, it was actually majority mixed race. So between French Canadian to Native American to other minorities with white settlers, they were all mixing together. So the idea that this was just a blank slate that Americans populated, I think, has been something that's been perpetrated over time to make it much simpler to explain the history of the region, but it is not actually how it happened. And if you think of the Midwest as rural, then there's all sorts of things you overlook, not necessarily even just the urban areas, but even the parts of our history in that how these urban areas have developed, whether St. Louis to Detroit to Chicago, you know, why are they so segregated, smaller? There is, when you are a region that has not only produced Grant Wood, American Gothic, Ernest Hemingway, but also Langston Hughes and Malcolm X, it is when you start to realize that there is so much thinking and history that has come out of this one region that if we concentrated a little more on it, it may help point, you know, the direction that America in general will be developing in the future of how you take this developed region that has done well and still does well, but still has a lot to overcome.
I see what you mean, but that's pretty ambitious considering that all most people can say is stuff like, oh, Midwesterners are so nice and wholesome. This just happens to be one of my things. It's like when people call us the Heartland, it just grates on my last nerve. I know it's a compliment, but really, we're all wholesome and nice.
Yeah, it depends on how you look at it. The term Heartland was actually coined in the early 20th century by the British military, and they were concerned that the world would break off into these super countries and that they would be controlled from the Heartland deep inside. And one of the earliest times it was used was in the book 1984. George Orwell writes about these super countries and that are controlled from deep inside Russia and then deep inside America. So if you want to rethink of the term Heartland, you could view this as like a more sinister epicenter that we are pulling the strings of everything around us. And if you look at anything from how many presidents we produced to how much art we have produced, I kind of prefer to look at it that way, that we are, you know, to use another Midwestern work of literature, we are the man behind the curtain that kind of pulls the strings for everything.
This episode of Midwesternish was produced by Matt Hodapp and Matthew Long Middleton. Sylvia Maria Gross is our editor. You can subscribe to this podcast on NPR One or wherever you generally do that kind of thing. If you're liking Midwesternish and you want to hear more stories from our little crew, you can check out Central Standard, a daily show that I host on Kansas City's public radio station, KCUR 89.3. Head to kcur.org to give it a listen. I'm Gina Kaufman. Thanks for listening.